You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What's up, everybody? Happy Tuesday. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Another gorgeous day in many areas of Wisconsin. I hope you are getting the opportunity to get out there and enjoy some sunshine and very spring-like temperatures. Very beautiful. Always puts me in a good mood, even when the news is bad. We got a great show for you today. I am very excited because on Tuesdays, we're joined at 2:30 by Civic Media's political editor, Dan Schaefer, for the State Slate with Schaefer. We're going to talk about some recent goings on, a little bit of the superintendent for public instruction race, all those good things. So that's coming up with Dan at 2:30. And today, as I am wont to do, I am going to talk about a number of things that seem seemingly unrelated. But trust me, ladies and gentlemen, they are related. They are of a whole, and I will stitch it all together for you before the end of the show. I have been beginning my shows these days with a few quick things. Today, I just really want to do two, and then I want to talk about the German elections, because what's going on there is fascinating. What did and did not happen in that election, very interesting, especially given the about face in U.S. foreign policy as led by Donald Trump, now bending a knee to Vladimir Putin and dictators across the world. Really strange yesterday. We didn't get a lot of time to talk about it. Of course, the U.N. Refusing to vote with its European allies and instead finding itself in the company of, let's see here, Iran, North Korea, and Russia. Yes, there was a resolution to condemn the Russian invasion of Ukraine some 3 years ago yesterday. So I'm going to get to all of that, but here were my couple of quick things. First of all, I'm sure you've heard about the use of Guantanamo Bay to hold migrants that Donald Trump is targeting. Here is the most recent statistic. I verified it from two sources earlier this morning. There are 1,000 U.S. military personnel at the Guantanamo Bay base. There are 14 migrants. 1-4. Now, I believe we still have some folks that we have deemed detainees, but that number is down either into the single digits or not more than 20. So I just want us all to observe the efficiency, the government efficiency here, of 14 migrants being held at Guantanamo Bay with over 1,000 military personnel. Sounds really efficient to me. So that's quick thing number one. Quick thing number two, the email fiasco with Elon Musk is now entering, I don't know, day three or four. What email fiasco? Because there seems to be a new one every week, you may be asking me. Well, this one, he sent an email and then tweeted about it over the weekend to all federal workers, including some Article 3 judges who don't, under even the most rudimentary Elon-friendly interpretation of our Constitution, answer to Elon Musk in any way, shape, or form, except for the fact that, you know, billionaire overlord, sent an email to federal workers that said, send me 5 bullet points of what you got done last week, and if you don't send it to me, you're going to be fired. And then tons of federal agencies, including the FBI and DHHS, tons of federal agencies, including those agencies being run by Trump appointees like Kash Patel and Pam Bondi and RFK Jr. and the Department of Defense, Pete Hegseth, then communicated to their staffs, no, you can just ignore that. Don't answer that. Or more ominously, DHHS told its employees, like, you can answer this, but just know that it may be intercepted by foreign interests. Gee whiz, maybe that's not the best emails to have flying around. The Trump administration, through its press secretary, sort of waffled around on the topic yesterday. And now, today, apparently Elon doubling down with the email saying, no, you really do have to do this. And the Trump administration, through its press secretary, seemingly saying, we're not choosing sides between the billionaire overlord and our cabinet-level appointees that have been duly confirmed by the Senate. I mean, this is ridiculous. Who is in charge here? Because it's apparently not Donald Trump. If he won't pick sides between his duly nominated and confirmed cabinet secretaries and Elon Musk over threatening to fire people if they don't send a nice bullet-pointed list of their accomplishments last week on the job, who the hell is in charge? Maybe it's Putin. I know, maybe it's Putin. Maybe Putin's calling all the shots here. This is terrible. And it speaks to Donald Trump's lack of engagement, not understanding what's going on. It speaks to the fact that Elon Musk is completely out of control, doing things that undermine our national security, things that Donald Trump's handpicked, personally loyal cabinet secretaries also think is stupid. I learned also today that apparently Elon Musk's big crackerjack plan with this email is to feed all the responses into a big AI general language machine to find out who's expendable, who they can fire. I just want you to, like, sit there and absorb that. If you thought it was bad when, like, Indeed.com was reviewing your resume for whether or not it contained keywords to put at the top of the pile when you're applying for a new job, can you imagine your fate? You've been in government service for, let's say, 15 years, and your fate in your job being determined by a guy, again, never confirmed by the Senate, whom the president doesn't really know if he's in control or his cabinet secretaries are in control. Your job fate not being determined by your boss, your immediate supervisor, your division head, your department head, or even the appointed secretary of the executive branch agency you work for. No, some other guy. But it's not even a detailed assessment of whether or not it's you're redundant, whether or not your departmental or division budget can sustain that level of employment. No nuanced view of that. No, just feed it into an AI general language model, and I'm sure it'll pop out an error-free result set of who should get canned in the federal government. So these are my two quick things to start the day, which is, does this sound efficient and effective to you? Because it doesn't to me. Which points out this isn't about efficiency. And shame on you, Democrats, for not getting ahead on this and saying we can do better. We need to be looking for cost cutting. Frankly, shame on you, Congress, conservatives and Democrats in Congress, for not exercising your Article I powers that include the power of the purse to do this kind of work. And there have been outside audits of the federal government. Congress just usually decides not to do anything with them. So I'm a little apoplectic over, I don't know, we should start numbering them. Is this email kerfuffle number 2 from Elon Musk? 2.2B? It's so ridiculous. And keep in mind, all of this happening while congressional Republicans are proposing their budget reconciliation bill that's getting ready to hand $4.2 trillion in tax cuts to the Donald Trumps, to the Elon Musks, to the Jeff Bezoses, the George Soroses, the billionaires of the world. They don't need tax cuts. They're fine. Why are we worried about billionaire tax cuts? Why these people? I do not understand. That's going on right now. Oh, well, we'll just direct certain congressional committees to find, you know, $1 trillion in savings. Oh, by a matter of math, does that savings have to come out of your Social Security? Check your veterans' benefits, your Medicare and Medicaid? Oh, well, the bill doesn't use the words Social Security. Yeah, but that's the only way you can find the savings. So, this is not about efficiency. Because if it was about efficiency, they wouldn't be proposing trillions in tax cuts to billionaires. That's not efficient. That doesn't make government more effective for you and your family. And you wouldn't be sending out random emails, but maybe not quite. It's a threat, but not really. We're not sure. Oh, but if you do respond, a foreign power may be monitoring it. Well, why is that, RFK? Again, that was DHHS's email to its employees today. So this is what, for Tuesday afternoon, this is what's got my hair on fire. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to have Dan Schaefer joining in just a wee little bit to review the affairs more central, more close to home here in the state of Wisconsin. He's going to come on at the bottom of the half hour. But let's get into a little bit of the German election. Why is the German election important? Well, because Elon has gone all in for Germany's far-right AfD party, or Alternative for Deutschland, Alternative for Germany party, even appearing at one of their rallies about 2-3 weeks ago, where he told the group via Zoom, children shouldn't be punished for their parents' mistakes. And we all just need to sort of move on. Of course, referring to the history of Nazi Germany, I'll say children shouldn't pay for their parents' mistakes, but they should damn well be informed of them. We're going to talk more about the German election when we come back. Going to take care of a little bit of business. Join me this afternoon, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Talk and text lines are open. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Everybody, my name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's really interesting when I list a number of things from the news that are irking me. I often will get extremely selective responses to what I say on the text line. Got one such response from John in Milwaukee. John, one of my frequent critics, I'll just call him generously on the text line, first calling me an angry woman. John, when you hear Democrats that are men on the radio, do you call them angry men? Just wondering. But John continues and he says, you're not just an angry woman, you're a liar. As of February 18th, over 170 illegals, no person is illegal, they were migrants, were at Gitmo, with many more on the way. No, John, see, you sometimes have to continue to read the news on a daily basis, because those 170 Venezuelan migrants deported to Guantanamo, which may be unconstitutional, were flown home. as of February 21st. So I'll take the feedback, but I hope you don't mind if I provide some of my own, which is, again, keep up with the news. I'm glad I could bring you some of that actual updated information, John. Folks, let's talk a little bit about Germany and what has been going on there. They have had a far-right party that often will get as close as German law will permit them to Nazi symbolism and ideology. It's called the Alternative for Deutschland, AfD. They have doubled their support in national elections in just 4 years. This last election, which occurred over the weekend in Germany, they racked up 20.8%. So this is a big deal. Now, the interesting thing is, if you look where the AfD's support is the strongest, it is basically like looking at a map of East and West Germany. I kid you not. It is like, if you're old enough to remember when there were still two Germanys and a Berlin Wall existed and Checkpoint, Alpha, Beta, and Charlie, the AfD took down the entirety of East Germany almost in an exact map of East and West Germany back from 1988. It's pretty wild. However, some of its popularity is spreading west. For 1 in 5 Germans, the AfD and its rhetoric has become normalized, according to some polls. Does this sound familiar to a bit of what's happening here at home? Now, even though Germany, by the way, has coalition governments, multi-party, and even though the AfD came in second with, let's see again here, 20.8% of the vote, it's actually blocked from being part of the next government because of what Germany has adopted. It's called a firewall. That it's not in the law, but it's Germany's main political parties, more centrist, one centrist left, one centrist right, adopted this firewall approach to basically agree to put their differences aside, govern as a coalition to keep any far-right party like the AfD out of governing power. They've had this arrangement since World War II. If that tells you how far-right the AfD is, there it is. The AfD, of course, claims it's libertarian, not racist. But, yeah, it's sort of... I'll believe what you do, not what you say. And in May 2024, so just last year, not too long ago, a German court rejected AfD's legal claims to change its classification by the German government as a far-right extremist organization. The judges in that case finding that the AfD had, quote, positions that disparage the democratic order and are incompatible with the principle of democracy. This election in Germany, biggest turnout in 40 years. It was like 82, almost 83% voting percentage, eligible voter participation. Which basically boils down to, if you want to do back of the envelope math, it's like 4 in 5 eligible Germans voted. They had 9 debates. 9 times. If you're a Ferris Bueller fan. 9 debates. We had 1. Again, the coalition government is going to be created from basically the center-left and the center-right parties in Germany. There's been a lot of shifting going around in the last decade, with one of the more far, far-left parties falling quickly out of favor. And I want to just point this last piece out about the German election. Just fascinating. I think it's got a lot of lessons for us. But one of the major social media had a big impact in this last election cycle for Germany. TikTok was huge. It actually is thought to have gained a lot of traction for the, quote, left party. That's the an actual name of a party there. Heidi Reichenach, which is the left's co-chair, she went viral on TikTok after she gave a speech denouncing the far-right AFD party and now has like over 580,000 followers on TikTok, and that post attracted some 7 million views, largely credited with saving the left party. Very interesting. Very interesting. And here's the last tidbit, then we'll take care of some business, bring our good friend Dan Schaefer on, talk a little state politics. Here's the last thing that I found very fascinating about these German elections. Young folks, ages 18 to 24, basically broke both far right and far left. Not a lot of voting in that age group for the centrist parties. Does this sound familiar, anyone? Whereas the above 24 folk, a little bit more centrist in Germany. When we come back, we're going to bring on political editor Dan Schaefer for the State Slate with Dan Schaefer, talk all things Wisconsin politics. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. All over, all over. I feel the earth move under my feet. Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Tuesday. It's 2:30, and that means it's time for the State Slate with Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's very own political editor and creator extraordinaire of the Recombobulation Era. You can find the Recombobulation Era on Substack and subscribe there. And you can also find Dan's great work at civicmedia.us. Welcome back to the show, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well, Maggie. Thanks so much for having me on.
You've been up since very early in the wee hours of today. You hosted one of our 6 a.m. shows. How'd it go, Dan?
Well, it was the show went really well, and I'm very happy with how it went. I'm not sure if you're hearing any audio issues on my end. I'm having a little bit over here. I apologize. But yeah, the show went really well. I am not a morning person, though. So getting up, setting the alarm for 4:30 to be into the studio by the 6 a.m. start time of the show, that was a little discombobulating for me.
A little discombobulating. Yes. I completely understand that, especially when you got to talk about some important political matters of the day. Let's just jump right in, Dan. What's top of mind for you this afternoon?
Well, for one, I just published a column at the Recombobulation Era. So I hosted the show this morning and published a column this afternoon. And the column is on the state Supreme Court race. It's on the state superintendent race. And I think this is going to be a more interesting race for state superintendent, more competitive race than we've seen for this office in quite some time. You know, this is part of the nonpartisan spring election cycle. And this is one of the races that doesn't get quite as much attention as the state's Supreme Court race. But part of that, I think, is because of the fact that we have that it has not been particularly competitive in quite some time. So we've Tony Evers, before he was governor, was the state superintendent. He won 2 elections in a row there with more than 60% of the vote. Jill Underlie, when it was an open seat in 2021, she won with about 57% of the vote. And I actually went back to see when the last time in Wisconsin this was decided by a single digit margin. And it has not been since 1997 that this race was decided by a close margin like that. So going into this one, you know, Jill Underlie You know, she got 38% in the primary. There's a couple different ways to see that. But Brittany Kinzer, she raised a ton of money as a late entry to this campaign. A lot of those funds came from your typical right-wing donors, Dick and Liz Uline, Diane Hendricks, a number of other names that you might be familiar with if you follow Republican politics in Wisconsin. And so because of that, and because of the increased turnout, I think everyone is expecting in the spring election with the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, I think this could be the first race in a really long time that might be decided by a really close margin. And I think that is something to pay attention to here. As we, you know, I think that the headlines will be about Brad Schimmel, will be about Susan Crawford for the next 5 weeks. 5 weeks from today is when that election is
right around the corner. Wait, so what's the right's obsession? Like, why are they flocking to Brittany Kinzer? I know she's also been endorsed by every Moms for Liberty chapter in the state. Scarlett Johnson posting almost daily, one of the leaders of Moms for Liberty here locally. Why are they all gung-ho for Brittany Kinzer, who at least attempts nominally to appear to be very reasonable and nonpartisan? Is she really reasonable? Is she really nonpartisan? Why so much money from the right wing?
Yeah, I think it is. I think they see an opportunity. I think if anything else, they see an opportunity. She's been, you know, an education consultant, former executive at a charter school. And she was also the CEO and effectively a lobbyist for the pro-charter nonprofit City Forward Collective. And I think, you know, Republicans in Wisconsin have wanted to take on the kind of public education establishment in Wisconsin for a really long time. And I think they see an opening here. I think they see an opening with Kinzer and the ability to, you know, recognize the increased turnout that's going to come from the Wisconsin Supreme Court race.
Sure.
There are going to be a lot of Republicans heading to the polls to vote for Brad Schimmel. Stands to reason that if they're going to vote for Brad Schimmel, they might also cast a ballot for Brittany Kinzer. And that would make, you know, there's really never been, at least in recent history, a candidate like Brittany Kinzer who's posed a real threat to this organization. So I, you know, was talking to some education policy is not my forte, but talking to some people who are in the field, saying that, you know, this would be a really big shakeup if she were to advance forward in this general election.
Here's what's concerning to me. I don't know what Brittany Kinzer stands for, other than I was an education consultant and I advocated for school choice. What exactly is her platform other than I support school choice, which says nothing about the fact that we're looking at threats to IDEA funds, Title I funds, this dismantling of the Department of Education. Says nothing to the 90% of kids in this state and nationwide that get educated at public schools if they're concerned about outcomes. Says nothing about what's going to happen to my kid if they need an IEP at my local public school. Says nothing about the Republican proposal to strip away from you and me and everybody else the right to, by referendum, fund our local schools. Where does she stand on any issues other than being apparently the chosen candidate of the far right here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, I think it is going to play to some of those things that have been controversial for Underly in her time as state superintendent. I know there was, you know, even just last week, legislators in Madison, assembly representatives passed a bill changing kind of the testing benchmark standards that have been in question for as of late. So I think that's a more complicated issue than it lets on.
And I realize that Republicans are going to do all kinds of stuff related to school testing standards. My question is, what is Brittany Kinzer's stand? I mean, when you talk to anybody in public education, they're going to tell you, well, testing standards are only so good. For example, many teachers I know, both rural and urban districts, will tell you, if a kid comes in and I teach sixth grade and they come in at a second grade reading level, and when that child leaves my classroom and they're at a fourth grade reading level, that is a victory. But a lot of those testing standards don't grab that sort of information. So where does Kinzer stand? I'm like, hey, what is the best metric to determine whether a school system, an individual teacher, is succeeding? Where does she stand on, for example, tracking students and placing them into either special needs courses or an accelerated courses? Or does she stand with the establishment and saying that students should be mixed together? I'm so worried about this election, Dan, because it's like we're just voting on sort of vague notions of what these candidates stand for. And this woman hasn't run a school district of any size, let alone one of this magnitude across a state. So I'm worried. How do we find out what these two candidates stand for?
Well, for one, we've had Jill Underly on the airwaves here at Civic Media, so you can go check out some of those interviews. Unfortunately, have not heard back from Brittany Kinzer's about what we might have an availability for there. But I think that's part of what's advantageous about her campaign is that, you know, when you're running as a challenger, when you're running against the incumbent, you know, you can just run on disagreeing with the incumbent. You can run on being the person who's going to bring change. And I think at a
undefined,
time right now,
unspecified, we have no idea what the change is. It's just something that's not the thing that exists now. I mean, I would like to think that Wisconsin voters are smarter than that when it comes to the future of their kids. That if you're going to vote for change, you damn well better know what the change that you're voting for is all about.
I think that's such a great point. But I think given the nature of this campaign, and I think the fact that, you know, Underly is being kind of put in this position to defend an establishment, a status quo that isn't necessarily working for people or working for all people in the way that they might want to. And I think it's important just broadly, you know, zooming out beyond this race for Democrats and those on the left to continue to be the voice for change, the voice for reform, instead of being kind of shoehorned into this uncomfortable position of defending a status quo that isn't necessarily working for people. I think that was a problem for Democrats last year in the presidential election and up and down the ballot. And I think it's a problem in these types of down ballot and, you know, ostensibly nonpartisan races as well.
One of the things that bugs me about that narrative here in the educational space was, first of all, it was Democrats coming out of the city of Milwaukee that really championed school choice, that created that, that got that going in the state of Wisconsin. Second of all, we need to be able to talk about what the legacy of vouchers and choice is in this country. It came about in the first instance as a reaction to Brown v. Board of Education. Vouchers and choice were created in the antebellum South to basically defund it, now forcibly integrated public schools, and create basically all white private schools funded by taxpayer dollars. If this is new information for you out there listening to Dan and I, go check out the incredible work of Professor Catherine Eden, E-D-I-N, at Princeton. She's written extensively about that. Here's a quick quote. This was written by the White Citizens Council, okay, in its journal, The Citizen, in 1964, right after Brown v. Board. Dan, I thought you would, in particular, get a kick out of this because it certainly sounds like a campaign ad that Brittany Kinzer may be running. Again, this from the White Citizens Council in its journal, The Citizen, in 1964. It offered up step-by-step instructions for parents about how to get money from the state of Mississippi to send their kid to a private school. Here's the quote. Parents want their children to be raised and educated free from the tensions of racial conflict in the classroom, free from the frustrating drag of mass mediocrity, and free from the blight of self-styled progressive educators whose avowed aim is to turn young Americans from the established inheritance of their fathers to alien theories of collectivism and anti-white racism. Sounds like it could be an ad running today, doesn't it, Dan? Weird.
There are always echoes of the past in what's happening in the present.
Or a scream, like an out loud, outright holler coming from the far right of today. I wanted to also talk with you a little bit about a very, I'm going to call it an invented freak out by the right that just occurred, Dan. People talk about Trump derangement syndrome. I'm just going to call it MAGA derangement, full stop, trans derangement syndrome. Dan, in brief, what was going on here coming out of the governor's budget address last week?
So this is really a strange one, and it is, you know, I don't know how much time we'll have to get in. I will have to get into this before the break, but basically, the right has started freaking out because they saw an item in Tony Evers' budget that changed the statute from saying the word woman to inseminated person. Now, yeah, on its face, and I went through this process too. I saw that and I was just like, that looks ridiculous. What is going on here? But then I actually read the bill. And my initial reaction was just something along the lines of, who's even asking for this? What is this trying to say? I read the bill and it's pretty much just clarifying language in a portion on artificial insemination that says if a lesbian couple has a baby by IVF, they're not both pregnant, but are both mothers. It also clears up some other things when it comes to fertility treatments and the like. They are not changing the definition of a woman to say inseminated person across the board. It is a completely ridiculous freak out that the right is having on this.
Yeah, just to try to make clear, two people can't be pregnant with the same child at once. That's not an actual thing, hence inseminated person. It's the right faux outrage machine. Version 3.52 sub BC Romanet 5. We're going to come back. More on the State Slate with Dan Schaefer after these brief messages here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We are in the 2:30 block, and it is Tuesday. So it is the State Slate with Dan Schaefer, creator of the Recombobulation Area, political editor here at Civic Media. We've been talking about a number of things related to the superintendent of public instruction race, a competitive race, that general election on April 1st. If you are not sure if you are registered, you want to confirm your registration, where your polling place is, all that good stuff, go to myvote.wi.gov. Put a big circle around April 1st. Make sure you've got a voting plan and get there. We got a couple of callers on the line, Dan, so we're going to go there. Jack from Merrimack, say hello to Dan. What's your question or comment?
Hey, Dan. My comment is this, and this is not emphasized nearly enough. Musk, who is supporting the insurrectionist favoring Schimmel, he's an American citizen. He's also an immigrant. These anti-immigrant people probably realize that, but he's one of the good guys, of course. But here's the other thing that most people don't know. He's a legal citizen of not one, not the United States alone, but three countries. And when you become a citizen, and I'm sure when he was a citizen in South Africa, he did this at more than one, you have to pledge allegiance to that country. So these folks that are really in favor of what he's doing need to ask themselves one interesting question. Who is he working for? Which country?
Fair point, Jack. I always say this. Billionaires have no party. They have no national allegiance. The only thing they have allegiance to is their own billions and their desire to amass ever-increasing numbers of those billions, and power, which is what makes me nervous. Billionaires make me nervous, I'm just saying. Ali from the Northwoods, say hello to Dan. What's your question or comment this afternoon?
Well, I have two comments. That as far as Brittany goes, if she can't come in and say what her change is, we have just gotten some change, haven't we? from Trump, and it's not necessarily the change that we want. You can't raise school test scores without providing proper funding for the public schools, and we need a legislature that is willing to do that, provide the funding. And not every parent lives in an area where there is a private school, or can they afford to send their child to private school?
Yeah, that's an incredibly important point. I want to get your thoughts, Dan, in just a second. One of the misnomers about choice and or vouchers is that it covers the entirety of the bill. Often they don't. So there's an issue there. And I will just say this about choice specifically. I have always advocated for income-limited choice programs. I think families of limited means deserve to have options for their children's education. What we're seeing now is those income limits have been blown away. The purpose, the reason that this issue has been co-opted by conservatives or reinvigorated by conservatives is, one, you can actually direct public tax dollars away from public education into private religious-based educational systems. It's a way to fund indoctrination, if that's a word you want to use. But it's a way to fund religiously based education. Secondly, many of these schools are profit-making enterprises. And third, I'll just say this. This is very much about attacking public schools to attack a critical coalition on the Democratic side. That has always been part of the plan. And in fact, you don't need to look very far. Grover Norquist, that drown the baby that is government in the bathtub. That guy said in 1998, school choice reaches right into the heart of the Democratic coalition and takes people out of it. Dan, your responses to Ollie from the Northwoods.
Yeah, I think, you know, so many good points there. And I think when you're thinking of the big picture, you know, one of the things you'll see in polling on when it comes to things like public education, there might be just kind of like this general malaise about like the state of public education that people might have some sort of negative views about. But when you ask people about the public school in their community, they're often very, very supportive of it. So I think it is just kind of like this, you know, it can be people, maybe it's like MPS has kind of become the avatar for this in recent years because of all the struggles of the state's largest school district. But you can see, you know, bad news about some public school district and think all public schools are a problem. But then you look in your own backyard and those public schools that in this day and age in Wisconsin are often going to referenda to try to, you know, fund certain projects and fund the schools, and people will often vote in favor of them in pretty overwhelming numbers. So I think that is, you know, an interesting piece of the larger dynamic.
Yeah, the monolithic scapegoat of, quote, public schooling is very easy to attack, especially when you have no particular plans of your own. Brittany Kinzer, I'm looking at you. You just go, oh, this thing isn't working well. And everybody goes, yeah, it's not working well. Well, what are you going to do to fix it? I'm going to change things. No further commentary. I mean, this is what I'm concerned about. Folks, if you are on the phone lines, I'll keep this conversation going after the top of the hour. Please, please, please stay there. This is so very important to all of us. If we believe the children are our future, show me the money if you want some mixed metaphors and pop culture references. Thanks so much to Dan Shaver, author of The Recombobulation Area and our political editor here at Civic Media. You can catch Dan and I talking about all things Wisconsin every Tuesday at 2:30. Keep it locked. We got news, weather, and sports up next. Then I'll be back on the other side with our callers and your thoughts about public education and so much more right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.